A while ago, I bought a few books from Amazon. This time, after I logged on, the computer greeted me back, welcoming me by name.
Is this you?
That's me. That's me.
Okay. Uh-huh.
The computer also remembered my past orders, and after comparing me with other customers who'd bought the same books, it calculated which new books I might like to buy.
The Untouchable, The Comfort of Strangers, Death in Summer, Breakfast on Pluto, I Married a Communist.
That's awfully good. I mean, frankly, that's very good, because I've already bought two of those books in bookstores.
That's because people who have your same sort of buying profile, that electronic soulmate,
have bought. This is really scary. I've read a lot of these books and bought many of the others.
And using the same kind of computer wizardry,
Amazon, let's do some of our own!
Welcome to Corn Killers. Our mission is to use some computer wizardry to report the intel from the front lines of the corn-cutting revolution so you can watch the stuff you love when you want, where you want. On whatever damn device you want. I'm Tom Merritt.
Oh, that's very good, because I am somebody who wants to cut the cord. It's fascinating. I'm Brian Brushwood. That was a 60 Minutes piece on Amazon.com from the year 1999. Of course, we're celebrating the fact that Jeff Bezos has become the richest man in the world over Black Friday.
Yeah. I don't know about celebrating or commemorating, or acknowledging.
We're
noticing.
We're side-eyeing.
We're jealously
glaring at.
Yes. So Jeff Bezos is the most valuable man in the world, right?
Yeah.
Is another way of putting
it? Boy, I'll tell you what. No, not in my heart. In my heart, the most valuable man is the version that appeared in that. At the beginning of that whole piece, the 60 Minutes piece, they're like, well, we're trying to find Amazon.com, and they gave us this address, and it's between the porno shop and these heroin needles. Oh, look, here it is, Amazon.com.
Here it is, at the address that they gave us.
Yeah. I mean, it's like...
We don't know if it's real.
There's genuinely a moment in which he says, you're telling me that Amazon.com can... can take down the likes of Sears Roebuck and Company. And he laughs unironically.
So no more Wells Fargo wagons coming to our town soon? Am I to believe that, sir? Look at that video. If you're on the audio podcast, we'll have a link in the show notes. That interface took me back too, because I think it was 97 or 98 when I decided to buy all my presents online to see if I could do it. And I bought most of them from Amazon.
Yes.
Got books.
At 640 by 480 resolution. Like, yeah. Those monitors were ridiculous.
Listen, folks, with the Thanksgiving break, we have fewer big breaking stories to talk about this week. So we're taking this opportunity to check in on the devices and the services that Brian and I use, because we know you guys are always asking us, like, which one should I get? What do you use? What do you like? So that's what we're doing for you today, starting with our primary target. In fact, I'll give Vaughn Bryant the credit for giving me this idea, because he asked, what TV streaming service do you recommend for 2018? We currently use PlayStation View. And it hit me, Brian, that we have reached the point where all of the services generally have the same features. They all have a DVR of some sort. They all generally have the most popular channels. And so it comes down to what I've always said for things like laptops and phones and everything like that, which is, well, it depends on what you want. We've left the era where I'm like, PlayStation View is definitely the best because of the features it offers. It's kind of another milestone.
Well, and we're about to dive into the specifics of why, but my immediate reaction was like, one? Why would you have just one?
Ah.
And because I think we're entering a period of hybridization where there's reasons to have multiple, if not at all times. And let's start with that. I will full on say, I don't think I've had just one over-the-top streaming service of any of the big players any time in the last 2 years, or maybe since.
And you're not counting Netflix when you say that, right?
Correct,
you're saying
correct.
Netflix is something I would have had anyway, no matter
correct,
what.
Correct. I would say I've not gone. There were times I had just Sling, and then I had just PlayStation View, and then I had both PlayStation View and Sling for another reason. And on top of that, I've had HBO Now. I've had Showtime. through Amazon. That's the other thing too, right? I've had stars through Amazon, and it's been wonderfully easy to subscribe and unsubscribe, and none of them give even the slightest hint of a contract associated with, you know, buying in for the entire year. It's been extremely easy to pick them up and set them down, and just utterly wonderful.
Yeah, in fact, I even got a little bit frustrated with Sling TV, and this is hilarious considering, because when I went to cancel it, I had to go a couple of clicks in where it used to be right there on the page, right? And I'm like, oh, trying to hide the cancel. And so, of course, you know, compared to I have to call the guy and sit on the phone and explain why I don't want it, it's still way easier. But I've gotten so spoiled now that I'm like, oh, so it's not immediately there.
Three whole clicks. Why, that's triple what I would hope for. I agree. There was a brief moment of frustration when I couldn't find it right away when I was canceling Sling. And I'll be back, Sling. Don't worry. We're still friends. When I went to cancel Sling, I couldn't find it immediately, and I had to I think I just opened a search window and typed cancel Sling, and then immediately the link took me straight to it. It was super easy.
Yeah. So I want to explain why I chose the services I chose. It's a little bit muddied because I make myself try all of them until I'm satisfied I understand how they work. And I'll often resubscribe to things when they add something significantly new. So there's a lot of times I have something like I have Hulu's live TV service right now because I'm still trying to see could I live with just it? Could I replace PlayStation View with it? But right now, PlayStation View is still the best one for me. It has the channels I need. And that's the key, is finding the channels you need. And I can live with the way the DVR works. Even though it's got a 28-day limit, I almost never run into that because they have such a wealth of on-demand. And that 28-day limit applies to rebroadcasts. So anytime AMC rebroadcasts the show that I'm recording, I'll get that. So I'll end up having more than the past 4 weeks worth of shows, it turns out. And it generally is the place I go to watch any streaming TV. That said, it's starting to feel a little long in the tooth because it doesn't have the Viacom channels. And the way the DVR works is a little wonky control-wise, whereas Hulu's DVR just works great. YouTube TV's DVR works great. So I think Sony may need to play some catch-up there in just the actual functionality of forwarding and rewinding. I'd say 1 out of 10 times when I'm trying to forward through something, it crashes and I have to kill the app and restart it, which is really annoying.
Yeah, I tend to either want to watch YouTube internet videos, you know, stuff like, let's say, reviews on Red Letter Media or something, my kids want to watch the live programming. Everything else for me is appointment viewing stuff. And in that case, the real question for me is, do I care about watching it live along with everyone else? In which case I would have to get a PlayStation View subscription, or am I okay with what I truly believe is the superior experience, which is just buying the season before it even comes out on Amazon and then opening it up, having all the commercials edited out, having proper, I love the X-ray feature. The moment, you know, if I'm wondering, oh, who was that guy also in? Just wiggle the mouse over it and suddenly you get all the projects he's been on and so on. I gotta tell you, I think having a hybrid approach has been the right thing for me, but I will allow that if you have kids, my daughter loves the PlayStation View experience. She gets to watch all the shows, and now she eats food in my office, and she gets kibbles in my keyboard, and it's driving me nuts.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a good reminder to me. PlayStation View is my overall service, mostly for DVR stuff, right? Like Mr. Robot, any of the AMC shows, Better Call Saul, that's all PlayStation View for me. I record it and then I watch it when I want. For live stuff, I tend to gravitate toward Hulu because if I'm watching live stuff, it's generally sports. And for sports, Hulu has this great little section called Your Sports, where it will show you exactly the teams that you told it you follow. If they're on, you just click and watch, and it will record those as well automatically. So if you're like, oh, I missed the Blues game, I can just like, oh, it's there. It's just there automatically. I can watch it from last night if I want. Then premium channels, HBO, Stars, Showtime, I find myself using them for browsing. So we get Stars because of Outlander. We get HBO Now because of Game of Thrones, and actually Insecure as well. We don't get Showtime anymore. I've canceled that. But when we had it, all three of those, I would just pop in and go, well, what movies do they have? Maybe I'll just watch one of these movies tonight because I'm already paying for the service. It doesn't cost anything extra. And then, of course, there's Netflix and Hulu. I use Hulu quite a bit for shows like Orville and Last Man on Earth, because they show up in Apple TV's TV app. And so instead of going into PlayStation View and finding the recorded version, I could just say, oh, the latest Bob's Burgers is out. Click. And I watch it that way. So it's kind of a hybrid version for me as well, but for different reasons.
Well, the only downside, and I understand that Apple TV is trying to fix this by having the one app to rule them all, to where it could tell you what comes out on what things. The only downside is that you're responsible for making your own rounds. You know, it's like it's for me, it's usually, you know, the witching hour from 10 till midnight or so as I wind down is the only TV watching that I get to do. And so I'll go to the usual suspects, you know, go to HBO Now. What do you got? I'm not feeling it. Let's go to Netflix. Let's go to Amazon. Let's go to Hulu. And then I go to bed.
Let's go to sleep.
But I got to tell you, I personally place virtually no value. I can not think of a single show outside of maybe Game of Thrones in the last year that it's been important to me to watch live along with everyone else. And again, maybe that's just a sports thing, but even unless it's an event like the end of a series or something, mm-hmm. I can't imagine wanting to watch it live. What about you? Like what? So for me, the percentage is maybe 3-4%. It's important to me that it be live. What about you?
Yeah, if you take away sports, it's probably around that same amount, right? Like Game of Thrones was one where I wanted to see the premiere and the finale live. My wife is insistent, like, I want to be part of that Twitter conversation, so I'm watching every one of these live. Twin Peaks was one I watched live. I was also recording a podcast about Twin Peaks, so I kind of had to have it done right away. Other than that, I don't think there's anything else that I have to watch live. Again, with the occasional, like, Star Trek Discovery, I watched live. I mean, I wasn't watching it live, but I watched it as soon as it was available because that was the premiere. But after the premiere, I wasn't doing that. Most of the time, I'm watching things maybe 2 or 3 days later even.
Well, and so and it's funny because I still don't know when Mr. Robot comes out. I just know that once a week, I think, is a new one out? No. Okay, I'll wait. And then I check again. But by that logic, I should cancel my PlayStation View subscription because it would save me a few bucks. But the kids just adore it so much. Yeah. Like it's that waterfall television, that constant nonstop, always something around the corner or whatever. And weirdly, I think stuff like the advertising feels like not a cultural touchstone, but like, oh, this is what other kids are hearing about. You know what I mean? Or at least that's how I felt when I was a kid.
Sure. The few times that I've been forced to watch something live with commercials lately, it's like reentering the society again. I'm like, oh, that Google has lots of ads these days. Well, that's interesting, right? Like, I don't see those because, again, I forward through most stuff on the PlayStation View. So you were saying you would cancel PlayStation View and just buy the shows because you don't care about watching them.
If I could, but that's really not on the table. So I have to, if I have to have a single live thing right now, I'm fairly in love with PlayStation View, but I haven't run into any conflicts as far as what content they have available and what my family wants. But the good news is all of them make it so easy to the moment you have beef, just peace out and then come back later. They're not going to punish you,
man. We went ahead and sprung to pay for Supergirl and Flash because we wanted to binge them. And we didn't want to deal with maybe having some of the recordings on our TiVo have not come out properly because occasionally the reception isn't good. And we certainly didn't even want to hit the green button to kick through the commercials.
I am so glad to hear you say exactly that, because I had been ashamed of the fact that I know that PlayStation View has USA Network and that I could watch Mr. Robot and that I'm entitled to watch Mr. Robot. I cannot be bothered to do a bunch of clicking up and down. So then I feel so good about the $2.99 I spend once a week for Mr. Robot to be completely
And for me, Mr. Robot, I'm like, okay, it's on PlayStation View. I'll do that. I'll flip through that. But with the TiVo, it's like, not only do I have to go to a different box that I don't use that often, but the reception might not be perfect and it's not available anywhere else. Like, that's it. They get the CW app with commercials. So if I don't want commercials, I look at it as I'm giving you my $3 in exchange for no commercials.
And it's fair enough. The only bummer is I used to hate, capital H-A-T-E, hate the idea of buying a television show sight unseen. Like, I will buy a movie that I've already seen and I know I love. I saw Fight Club in the theaters, I paid for the ticket experience. I love this movie. The moment it's out, I'm going to buy this movie because I want it with me forever and ever and ever and ever. The idea of having to buy a television show that might be a piece of garbage that I absolutely hate and never want to look at again is very, very frustrating. But rentals never hit that sweet spot, right? Like, if rentals were only 99 cents, man, I'd eat those up all day long. And if I it a lot, then I'll go buy it. Then I'll go buy it or rent it again.
There was something inside of me that did not want to ever pay for an episode of Lost on iTunes, even though our DVR had, you know, screwed things up. And the only way to really catch up on the older episodes, because we weren't watching from season one, was to get the DVDs otherwise. And one day I said, well, wait a minute. Would I pay $1.99 to rent an episode of Lost? Why, yes, I would, because I'm not buying it. And suddenly I'm like, what if that rental came with infinite numbers of replays? Should you want them? I'm like, what a great deal. $1.99 to rent an episode of Lost that I can watch forever? I'm in. And from then on, buying shows just changed. The definition changed in my mind. This is a rental with no expiration.
I am so happy to hear you say that, because I think this is something I don't think we really explored before. Like, that term, buying, is a bad term. They shouldn't use it, because it's not like you have it to hold in your hand. What you're doing is you are guaranteeing lease access in perpetuity until the company folds.
Right. Yeah. And with DRM was what kind of shoved me into that mindset, was like, well, I don't really own it because of the DRM and the terms of service. And I'm like, okay, well, then is it still worth $1.99? I'm like, well, yeah, I guess it is.
Right.
Because I'm not really going to watch it more than once in most cases anyway.
Well, I'm happy to hear that, man. So what is your suggestion? If you.
Yeah.
Your universal suggestions.
Yeah. My wife does work for NBC Universal, so I'm not going to suggest Universal properties specifically, but I have to disclose that now because you said that. My answer to Vaughn is we are at the point where you might want to look at the features, or maybe, you know, certain apps like YouTube TV aren't available on your platform. Rule those out. Right. And say, OK, well, I use an Apple TV, so YouTube TV is an option for me because I don't want to AirPlay it. Figure out, like, what are the ones on the platform you use that you can choose from, and then go use that Recode tool that we talked about last week. We'll have a link to that in the show notes again, and put in the networks that are important to you. You want to watch Walking Dead? Put in AMC. You want to make sure that you catch Legion when it comes back? Put in FX. You know, whatever it is that you need to have put in, and then look at the list and find out, okay, which of these covers the most of the networks that I need to have? And am I okay buying one that maybe doesn't have one of my networks, but I know I can just buy the series from the iTunes store, the Vudu store, the Google Play store to make up the difference?
Here is my advice to everybody listening right now. And I think this applies whether you are a single individual at home, whether you're married, whether you have a full family and a bunch of TV addicted kids. If you are value conscious, the best possible way for you to figure out what you don't want to pay for stuff that you don't use. You only want to pay for stuff that matters most. Your best option is to, step one, cancel everything. Cancel everything. Now, they'll all have 30 days to, you know, you'll have the rest of the pay period before they kick you off of the service, whatever the service is, whether it's traditional cable or satellite or whatever. Use those until they run out, and then just decide you're just going to go, not quite a diet, because it's a diet where you get to eat whatever you want, but you have to consciously choose what you are going to eat. Let your satellite subscription run out. Then wait until one of your kids says they really want to see, you know, whatever, we'll say Sarah and Duck. And then sit down and say, like, well, what are the ways we could watch Sarah and Duck? And you type it in, and you're like, we could watch the old episodes on Netflix. There's seven seasons there. Is that good enough? Or maybe she says, no, I need the latest episodes of Sarah and Duck. By the way, if it's a kid, they're going to be happy with Netflix. That's probably all you need. And then resubscribe. Go ahead and put little barnacles all over your boat until your boat is starting to feel like it's not going fast enough. Then scrub them all off again. And once a year, do a purge. Once yearly, full media purge.
The only thing I would add to that, I think that's a great way to go about it. And one of the reasons you can do that is because you can cancel stuff. If you start putting the barnacles on your boat and you realize, oh crap, I'm now paying for three services because they didn't have all the channels I wanted, but I didn't realize this other service, DirecTV Now, say, has those, just cancel those three and subscribe to DirecTV Now. I mean, that's the beauty of this. You're not locked into a contract. You don't get a penalty. You just switch.
Yeah. Plus, also by doing this, you get all of those sweet, sweet enticement deals where it's like, well, you can watch it for free for 7 days. Why don't you jump on in? And as long as you're diligent and smart, and we've talked about this before, if you want a hack where you could get a trial of a thing and not get suckered into doing it forever, if you sign up at shameless plug for my own stuff, privacy.com/rogue, you can sign up and you could create burner credit cards that you can use to activate the trial, and you could set them with a balance of zero. And then, unlike your actual credit cards, because if you cut up one credit card and get another one reissued, even though the new one has a different number, they could still charge it for some idiotic reason. There's a grace period.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Whereas if you make a true burner credit card on privacy.com/rogue, then I'm going to say it as many times as I can. There's no way for them to charge you, and you don't have to, you only get the exploratory phase.
Now, if you're sitting there going, this all sounds way too complicated, just go to the Recode link, put in the things, find the one that fits, and subscribe to it. But if you're like, I'm value conscious, like Brian said, I want to make the most, then I think that cancel anywhere thing and just see what do you actually need. I think that's a great way to go.
And it's fun. It's fun because it's fun to buy something for the first time. And, you know, it's not fun to juggle your finances and figure out which of these services gives you the most value. It's way fun to fire everyone. And then it's fun to sit there with your arms crossed and slowly rehire them one by one.
Now, Perface for Radio points out something very important. Just don't cancel your Patreon payment to Court Killers.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. That's the one proviso. That's the one thing you must never do.
Because we need you to stick around. And if you don't have a Patreon payment, we need you to add yours, because we're trying to get to $1,850 or people, whichever comes first, so that we can commence the great Spoiler in Time project.
Yeah, man. Look, we are coming up on, 7 years? You and I have been exploring back catalogs and new releases of television shows, giving our opinions live in the moment and in a very real sense, to give our authentic reactions. And of course, people watch things asynchronously nowadays. You might watch The Wire years after we watched it. But each time an episode finished, wouldn't you love to say, I wonder what my buddies Tom and Brian thought of this episode? Be able to just click an easy-to-search database that just takes you right to it? That would be amazing.
Yeah. If you're like, huh, I wonder what Tom thought of that when he was in his early 40s. You can do that in the Spoiler in Time rewatch project.
No, you and I, we never change. We are always the same. Our interests and our focus is never inconsistent.
Check it out. Patreon.com/cordkillers. Now let's talk about how to watch. So another question that we get from time to time is, what device should I use? Should I get a Roku? Should I get an Apple TV? Should I just use a laptop? So Brian and I are going to talk about that. I'm going to talk a little bit about the set-top boxes, and Brian's going to talk about the other options. And I may surprise some people, I may not, when I say that I find myself using Apple TV more and more, despite the fact that intellectually I think it is a deficient platform because it's so closed off. part of the reason I'm using it more and more is it's less closed off than it used to be. There's a Vudu app now. Theoretically, there's an Amazon app coming one of these days, supposedly by the end of the year. I still haven't seen it, but hey, it might still come. But I can get more things on it than I used to. And that TV app is really compelling for me to be able to just turn on the TV and it say at the top, here's the next episode of a show we know you like, or here's partway through the movie you were watching last night. You can pick up right where you left off. Just is really great. I love Roku better intellectually. I know that Roku is better for me. It's more open. It has more apps, but their interface is lacking and a little bit harder to use these days. So I use both because, if I want to watch something on Amazon or Fandango now, my wife works Fandango. We do that from time to time. I've got to go to Roku to do that. And I do like the Roku Ultra. It's a great machine. But that Apple TV interface is definitely the best interface, even over the Amazon Fire TV, which I find myself using very rarely.
Trey Warren in the chat captures my thoughts on the Apple TV perfectly. Once Amazon gets up, I think it's the one I would recommend universally. I've heard so much good stuff, but I'm too embedded in the Amazon ecosystem, and I don't want a blended household. I stayed married for 20 years for a reason.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that is the Apple TV weakness. I mean, I don't know why Apple does that. They don't do it on iOS, right? But they make it hard for people to get on. And then on iOS and Apple TV, they make it hard for you to purchase things. I mean, Apple TV, hands down, if everybody had their apps on it and I could buy things through those apps. Android TV has the advantage there. Roku has the advantage there because I can just buy right from my TV remote. But interface-wise, I just find it easier to use.
So I had a transformative moment as we did show prep today, because I'm aware of my habits and how I watch stuff. We've talked many times about how the kids watch stuff versus how I watch stuff versus how Bonnie watches stuff. But I had never seen it just written in black and white on the show prep doc that Tom says, oh, and Brian can weigh in for the non-television set user. And I thought, well, I'm not a non-television set. I have a TV that I've not watched a single program on that my 4-year-old watches. And well, my daughter, well, she steals my office downstairs to watch PlayStation View, and I hide in the studio to watch TV and play Hearthstone. Bonnie, she watches on her laptop. And I realized I don't know when it happened, but just my 4-year-old is the only one who uses the TV. And I think it's because as all of our kids get older, the house gets smaller. It's a fairly open plan house. So sure, Whoever's watching in the living room, it's heard by everybody in the entire house, which limits me because there's adult programming I'd like to watch that I can't watch. There's video games that I like to play, you know, that I can't play, you know, like The Last of Us. I got 20 minutes into on a replay and I was like, oh yeah, no, this is not a living room game. And so I'll tell you this much. If you want to be a non-television user, I was trying to think of what's the most important thing, and I think it is, number one, have decent speakers, and number two, have multiple monitor setups. What percentage of everybody at home right now do you think has multiple monitors? Because in theory...
You mean to one device, right?
Yes, correct. Mm-hmm. In theory, it should be a roughly equivalent experience to have a really big monitor and you set up your show on one half of the screen and your game that you're playing on the other half of the screen or whatever you're doing. It's not. It's fundamentally different. The studio setup as Bryce, could I ask you to turn on the webcam and just kind of point it around? Is that doable?
Yeah, this will be a great visual.
Okay, well, I'll describe it for everyone. The studio setup where I watch most of my programming is a setup that spans three computers and has 9 monitors.
And a very short webcam.
Now, I assume most of you out there have 9 monitors set up.
I'll tell you this much. My preferred setup as a non-TV person is the top monitor is programming, so that's what I'm watching, watching TV. The main monitor is where Twitter's open or whatever my piddling is. And then to the left, that's where I play Hearthstone. And between those three, I have this perfect balance. There's something psychological about having a content go full screen that makes it feel immersive and cinematic. And by the way, if you don't have multiple monitors but do have multiple computers, we use Mouse Without Borders that allows you to drag your mouse right off of one computer onto another one, which is, I'll say, just as good. So if you have just one desktop with one monitor but you also have a laptop, you can set your laptop on and you can control it. Just Google Mouse Without Borders.
That's actually really similar to how I watch stuff sometimes.
Oh, yeah?
So I've actually really gotten a lot of use out of the Switch as a video gaming thingy.
Mm-hmm.
But it also means I can play Mario while I'm sitting on the couch and I can have YouTube on the TV. Or if there's something that's not on YouTube or I can't get it on the console or the set top I want, I can just pull up my laptop and have it on the side of the couch.
Right,
like,
right.
Like, there are you don't even need to be at a desktop computer to have a multi-screen experience, which sometimes is overwhelming, but it's totally doable, and I'm sure people do that similarly with their phones, right? I mean, who doesn't search on Twitter on their phone while they're watching a movie or something?
Right.
So this is a revelation for me now, because I realize that what we do, and one of the reasons that I don't watch things off the television more often, is that one of the things that Eileen and I bonded over when we first met and still to this day love doing is watching TV shows together. It's one of our favorite things to do. So we're very often in front of a television watching TV, but each of us has a phone and each of us has a laptop on the arm of the couch.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
We're not so different, you and I.
It's just a bigger screen that both of us are looking at. That's really the only difference.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, the only downside to it in the studio, maybe this is what I'll do for Christmas, is try to set up actually kind of there's one big screen that's the studio monitor, and it is fun to, instead of watching in the living room, which is big and cavernous and insane, when we'll watch a movie, sometimes we'll drag all the kids in there, we'll set up some beanbag chairs, and we'll just cozy up, you know, as you know, like an old-timey family, and watch
regular
something on there.
Regular families have beanbag chairs.
I don't know. They'd lay couch cushions all over. I don't know.
Yeah, but in the 60s, it was all beanbag chairs in all the homes.
But my point is the one thing I regret is that the monitors, the audio here is very rudimentary. It's only left and right channels, and they're never placed in the right place. I think you've inspired me, Tom. I think I'm going to try to make the studio a little bit of a tiny theater that I can pull the family into.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love that. I love that idea. And I love that we've sort of cracked the code that really we're all multi-screen viewers these days.
Yeah.
No matter what. I mean, it's funny that if Eileen, I just realized this too. If Eileen is not there sometimes and I'm watching a show, I'll be like, I don't want to bother putting the TV up. I'll just watch it on my phone.
Oh, and that's the other thing. I've definitely been there. And that's one of the things I love about the services nowadays is that you get halfway through on a show on Netflix or HBO or any of them, and you put the phone away and then you open it up on a desktop and it picks up right where you were.
Yeah. I mean, I will be literally lying on my couch in front of my television watching a show on a phone.
Can I confess something, Tom? This is how bad it's gotten. Started watching shows without the audio.
What?
That clip.
It used to be about a year ago, you were super into the audio descriptions because you could listen to shows
while biking.
Watching them.
Yeah, but when I'm sitting at Trudy's prepping for the show trying to pick an opening video, I don't want to disturb everyone around me with audio playing.
But so you don't want to have headphones?
Well, okay, but I don't happen to have headphones. Well, actually, they have lightning, so they won't attach to the thing. Okay. The point is, like, that opening clip, I watched all of just on the auto-generated closed captions on YouTube.
Really?
And I feel like you get the story. It was, I don't know. Huh. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, folks, we'd love to hear from you as well. Cordkillers@gmail.com or just on our posts at patreon.com/cordkillers. You can let us know what you think, what kind of topics like this that are not news per se, but just general topics about how people watch this stuff that you'd like to hear us talk about. Let us know. patreon.com/cordkillers. Let's move on to what to watch in Under Surveillance.
It's all about location.
Under Surveillance.
So real quickly, before we get into what we're watching, I wanted to note that on Friday, Eileen noticed that there were some Black Friday deals with movies, digital movies online. So we go online, we're looking around, and we're like, oh, that one's only 99 cents. Oh, that one's only $2.99. Oh, look at that bundle of superhero movies. Those are all ones we want to get. Man of Steel is the only one in that one we want, but we can get that one for $9.99 if we go to Apple TV. And I realized suddenly we were collecting movies again, which we used to do back in the 2000s. We used to buy like a DVD a month to build our movie collection. And then at some point when Netflix became streaming and we were just watching digital all the time, we just started selling off our DVDs. We still have some of our most treasured ones, but we no longer collected movies. We just watched on demand. And now with Movies Anywhere, I guarantee you this is why we're doing it, because now every movie we buy, we can both see on all of our devices because we have a Movies Anywhere account that we feed into. We have the family account on iTunes. We have the family account on Amazon. And so when we buy it, it's available again. And there's more stuff available to choose from. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, we've gone back to it. I didn't know if we'd ever return to wanting to collect movies, even though they're not objects.
So how much of your return to these habits do you think is an honest desire in your heart, like it's important to me that this movie be available at all times? And how much of it is, do you think, tickling the random reinforcement, the gambling part of your brain? You get that serotonin rush when you're like, oh, winner, 99 cent, gimme, and then you feel good when you press buy.
That is definitely what's driving Eileen, because she's the one who said, like, hey, deals, let's look. I'm less motivated by that. And what would always get me to stop her in the past, or also I think sometimes it would just stop her before she'd even talk about it, is, but if I buy it here, I can't watch it on this device.
Right.
Or this company might get bought. And then what happens with Movies Anywhere and Ultraviolet, to be honest, because that feeds into Vudu, I feel less worry about that because I'm like, well, when I buy it there, it's going to be on all of the services. So I won't have to do any thinking about, well, which service has my movie now?
Yeah. Well, that's good. So what have you been watching now that you're buying stuff again?
Well, the things that we bought, I can't remember everything we bought. Man of Steel was the one we bought and watched right away. Because, you know, as flawed as that movie can be, we really liked it. And we're big Superman fans. And rewatching it reminded me just how much of it is good. It's really only toward the end that it starts to drag for me. We also bought, I don't know, Eileen bought a couple of romantic comedies. I can't remember what else we bought, to be honest, which is sad. I'd have to go look. Citizen Kane was one that I wanted to have because we're going to be watching that up on Current Geek pretty soon as well. But I don't think I bought that one on Friday. I think I bought that one previously. So I should have been more well prepared. But what I've been watching, what I've been actually watching, is Justice League on Thanksgiving Day. No problem getting seats, Brian.
You don't say. I wish I could remember the exact details of our exchange when you texted me saying, hey, did you watch Justice League? And I said, you know, what's funny is I almost did today. And then I remembered it was Justice League.
Yes, like, that's pretty much exactly what you wrote. Yeah. Again, Eileen and I are big fans of Superman and huge fans of the Wonder Woman movie. We wanted to see that. So we wanted to see more of her. I was a big fan of Super Friends. I actually watched some old Super Friends episodes before we went to the theater. But we went in fully knowing, like, this is a turkey, right? This is a collection of short films, essentially.
That's why you ate it on Thanksgiving.
Cobbled together.
That's why you saw it on Thanksgiving? Is because it's
Yes, turkey. That's exactly why we saw it on Thanksgiving, because it was our Thanksgiving turkey. It was what I expected, which was four or five different movies slammed together in one. Like, even worse than Batman versus Superman, which was two attempts at movies slammed together into one. I liked Aquaman. Would have loved to seen that as a movie. I liked Flash okay. Thought he was pretty good in the scenes he had. Would love to, like, care about him, you know, give me reasons to like him. Wonder Woman was great because she's been well established, and I don't think they did anything to damage the character. If anything, she was a little underutilized. The Superman reveal was great. I don't want to spoil it much, but that part of the story was I think well told. it was just really draggy in parts and trying to do too many things at once. If anything, the Batman parts were the best because they really didn't try to give him a story other than being the guy trying to pull all these people together. The villain was underwhelming. They should have done much more to make me fear and care about defeating him. But in the end, it was fine.
Put that on the poster. Fine. Tom yeah. Meritz, 2017.
Otherwise, we did some binging on Supergirl and The Flash, and of course, watch Mr. Robot and Deadwood for spoiler in time, as well as on your suggestion, I took a look at the first episode of Future Man.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in spoiler in time for sure. Tom, I want to propose to any decent person on the planet that they institute a new Thanksgiving ritual, which is to every single year watch Wes Anderson's Fantastic Mr. Fox. Everything about it is so perfectly feel good and Thanksgiving-y. It's got this amazing autumnal color palette. The music holds up. Bill Murray's amazing. George Clooney's amazing. The animation is just adorable from beginning to end. It's great, man. Go watch, just buy Fantastic Mr. Fox and watch it over and over and over again.
I really thought you were going to say institute a tradition of seeing a turkey movie.
A bad movie.
I think your suggestion is a better one.
Okay, good. Because it's not a turkey. I watched Deadwood, which we'll talk about. Of course, the new Mr. Robot. I watched three episodes of Future Man. I'm glad that you jumped out on the first one. I watched all of HBO's High Maintenance, formerly Vimeo's High Maintenance, from 2016.
The new sketches of High Maintenance.
Yeah. It's very good. Six half hour episodes. Did you watch them all?
Yeah, I was watching it week to week. It's a funny sort of weird
and
thing.
Adorable and poignant and sad and wonderful. The one with the dog is adorable. And the weird sex party people and
yeah.
You know,
and like all the minutia. Yeah,
it's great. Just all the detail. It's so unusual. Did you notice them playing Radiolab in the background of one of them?
No, but that
doesn't surprise you, right? it's great. And then I also watched Jim and Andy, the documentary about Jim Carrey portraying Andy Kaufman in Man on the Moon. And I'm going to say it's a fine piece of documentary filmmaking, and it seems to portray an accurate representation of what life was like off screen for somebody engaged in method acting. And I think it made me absolutely hate everything about method acting, and it made me want to punch Jim Carrey in the face. you see him performing as Andy Kaufman or as Andy Kaufman as Tony Clifton being an asshat to everyone on set, and then they ring the bell and the scene is over, and then you watch him continue to be an asshat afterwards to everyone, and you see the pained smiles as everybody quietly tolerates this, and it's like, look, I don't know what's going on in your life, man, but it seems like a better actor would be able to turn it on and turn it off. This business of keeping up being a dick to everyone at all times, it turned me off on method acting altogether. You're a bad actor if you're a method actor. How about that?
Oh,
come at me, bro.
Okay, oh, no. All right. It's always easy to criticize somebody's profession that you don't know how to do.
Okay,
Ryan.
You're not a bad actor. You're a rude person. How about that?
I think that is just objectively true. Yeah.
it's so painful for me to watch him taxing everyone around him, and then to cut to him, and you might be forgiven, like somebody I mentioned this on Twitter, and somebody said, well, it's pretty clear he was in a rough spot, and you know, he was, you know, not quite balanced at the time, and yet they cut to him with this giant crap-eating grin 20 years after the fact, just so proud of himself, talking about how, you know, it's like, yeah, and so I showed up and talked to Andy Kaufman's daughter, long-lost daughter, as Andy Kaufman. So that's a little gift I gave her. I'm so great. And it's like, ew, I didn't like
it. Maybe, I actually wonder if there was a similar documentary about someone not Andy Kaufman who was being portrayed, who was like nice. Like, I wonder how that would change it or if it would. I don't know.
I don't know. But I felt a lot of feelings that I recommend everybody watch it and tell me if I'm
Morgan
wrong.
Freeman or something, you know?
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see what Bryce has been on the lookout for. Bryce?
Hey, Marcus sent along a travel show. He writes, "Hi, guys. I have a recommendation for Bryce and probably Tom and Brian on Netflix. It's called Jack Whitehall Travels with My Father. Jack is a comedian and an actor from the UK, and he wanted to do backpacking around Asia, like a gap year trip, you know, before kids go off to college. He couldn't do it when he was younger. So for some reason, he invites his proper septuagenarian father to come along. It's a funny show, mainly driven by the two of them bouncing off each other, and reminds me of the Top Gear travel specials in some way. Thanks, Marcus." Yeah, I watched the first two episodes today, and there's a lot of really funny situations. You have his father, who is, you know, always prim and proper and is always wearing this khaki suit, and Jack, who, you know, is... wants to go on a vacation and go and see the sights and party, and it creates this cool like comedy duo sort of bit. It's definitely semi-scripted. It's pretty obvious, but it does still seem to have a lot of the fish out of water stuff that something like An Idiot Abroad would have. And I think it works well. You're not going to watch this and think, "Oh, that was a great documentary." But it is a really good travel show. So that's Jack Whitehall Travels with My Father. There are 6 episodes of that on Netflix now.
Awesome.
Excellent. That looks really interesting. Folks, if you got something we should be on the lookout for, email us cordkillers@gmail.com. Now, today is Monday. If it is in fact still Monday while you're seeing this, you can go buy my new book, Pavaria, on lulu.com and use a code that I'm going to tell you shortly when I find there it is, cyber40, to get 40% off the print version of Pavaria. If it's not Monday, get the Kindle version. It's a lot cheaper, or just pay full price for the paper version. But this is a book with that's about a colony ship that is broken down, and a lot of people have forgotten they're on a ship because it's so big, and they're trying to fix it. But then there's some people trying to stop them from fix it, and maybe there's a good reason for that. That sounds interesting. Check it out, Pavaria, at either lulu.com, lulu.com. Again, cyber40 is the code to get 40% off of the print version there, or just search for it on Amazon or find it at tommerrittbooks.com. That's that. Let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines!
Production on House of Cards Season 6 is expected to resume December 8th without Kevin Spacey. Writers have been working during the hiatus, presumably to figure out what to do with Frank Underwood.
Man. Marvel has 22 films from the release of Iron Man to the end of Phase 3, with a fourth Avengers film in 2019. But in an interview with Vanity Fair, Kevin Feige... says, quote, "We've got another 20 movies on the docket that are completely different from anything that's come before, intentionally, as well as, quote, there will be two distinct periods, everything before Avengers 4 and everything after. The only films acknowledged in this fourth phase are Spider-Man and Guardians of the Galaxy sequels." I think it's a smart play. Smart play all around. I think that's a good idea.
I think they kind of have to not get rid of these characters, but stop relying on Iron Man, Hulk, Captain America, because people are like, "Oh, okay. Yeah, I've seen them. I know what they do. Thor, sure." You know, and as Bob Iger said, they've got the rights to 7,000 characters.
Wow.
And if they can make you care about Black Widow and Iron Man the way they did.
Here's the thing, is there's no reason that they can't make you feel about Spider-Woman the way you feel about Iron Man, because
absolutely,
because nobody average moviegoer knew who Iron Man was before they saw the movie. It was the writing and the characters and the visual set pieces and all that got them super excited about it. And you could do that for any of the 7,000 tabula rasas sitting out there.
Yeah, and I think it's smart to we haven't done a lot with Guardians. We'll keep them going. We just got back into bed with Spider-Man, thanks to Sony's cooperation. So let's bring them over. But everything else, we can start fresh. So that's interesting.
Agreed.
Plex confirmed to TechCrunch that it is rolling out a feature for its over-the-air DVR function that will automatically remove commercials from recordings. Plex's documentation warns the feature can take some time and cause high CPU utilization. It's available in beta now for Plex Pass subscribers. And when I say remove, I don't mean skip. I mean, they just delete them. So, take them right out.
So in other words, the headline is, after 20 years, Plex brings to you the piracy experience.
I mean... If you've ever torrented something, which you shouldn't, you know that the seamless removal of commercials is usually pretty good.
So this means if it's using up your computer CPU at such a high usage, that means it must be re-rendering these files.
Yeah, it's
edits.
Going in and finding the commercials and deleting them and making a new file, yeah.
So it's got to do some kind of contextual thinking about, like, well, Smouter. This looks like the beginning and the end and the faces match before and after.
Wow.
Yeah. Wild. YouTube TV subscribers lucky enough to have a device that can upgrade to Android Oreo can now do picture-in-picture. That means you can keep the video from TV streaming while you do other things on the phone or tablet. Netflix, Chrome, VLC, and Facebook also support the feature.
That's nifty.
Yeah.
Spike Lee has created a Netflix series based on his 1986 debut movie, She's Gotta Have It. The series focuses on struggling Brooklyn artist Nola Darling again, who's in a casual relationship with three very different men. It premiered on Netflix November 23rd. And unlike the 1986 movie, they gave Nola a lot more going on in her life. So she's a much deeper character.
Right on. And a Reddit account called Last Envoy has been posting images that look to be art, referring to a Netflix upcoming 10-episode series, Altered Carbon, based on the book by Richard K. Morgan. The GIFs depict the Skin Jobs dive bar, smokes and vapor shop, and a noodle joint. Netflix isn't commenting.
Yeah, they're just art, but they're definitely taken from the book. And so if they're art and they look movie-like and they're animated and it's from an account, named after something from the book, The Last Envoy. It's just, I don't know. Takeshi Kovacs is one of
and
the
these
last
do,
of the
And these do look... it would... If somebody was trying to get excited about leaking stuff in advance, I don't think they... Because these are artificially animated GIFs. These are not GIFs that are video squished down to a GIF.
Right.
This is... They took a photo and then they used one of the GIF animation softwares to add flicker, to add smoke, to add rain or whatever. This smells like a stealth marketing campaign for sure.
Let's check out the dispatches from the front. Joshua from Lynchburg, Virginia, VA, not PA, apologize for the error, has been following the controversy he stirred up and wanted to write in with a few more clarifications. He says, look, it takes 7 movie tickets in order to get enough points for a free small popcorn, and I upgrade it to a large for $2. Before MoviePass, I never bought concessions. I'm in my mid-20s, and now I spend $2 almost every time I see a movie. It's not like they are losing money. Well, economists might argue with you, but I get what you're saying. I wouldn't buy popcorn at all and just see the movie. So they're making more money off them than they would have, is what he's saying.
This just in, Tom, Kevin Feige has just confirmed that after this 3-week saga of Joshua's story, there'll be a brand new Joshua story with a completely different Joshua. Get ready.
Well, and here's a tease to that new phase. Regarding the MoviePass terms of service, I'll need to take a closer look.
I mean, look, that's the way extreme couponing goes, is you catch them when the coupons, you know, you hold them to it, and then they change the coupons because they didn't expect anyone to use it that way and stuff. Lisa writes in saying, hey guys, cut the cord yesterday and just stumbled across your podcast and I love it. Well, welcome, Lisa. Since I've only listened to a couple of episodes so far, which by the way, makes me feel really good about doing an episode like this where we go back over some of our greatest hits. After listening to a couple episodes so far, maybe you've already addressed these topics, and sorry if that's the case, but I had a couple of questions for you. Little background first, I live in West LA. My cable company was Spectrum, and I have Netflix and Hulu subscriptions and view them on the Roku. I also ordered an HDTV antenna to install on my roof, and I suspect I'll be able to get the main channels for free. Now the questions. Number one, I need a new internet provider. Not sure where to go. Where were you guys in the same situation? What was your solution? Spectrum was charging too much, and I wouldn't budge on price, so I canceled it on a whim. It will be shut off on December 12th. Number two, my only real issue is now what how I'll watch my favorite show, Better Call Saul. There's no AMC on Hulu, and I really don't want to pay Sling $20 a month for one show. Is there another way to watch it when it airs again? Should I buy episodes as they air on Amazon Prime? Assuming they're available the next day, is there a better way? Thanks for the podcast. Thank you for the kind words, Lisa. Tom, I have thoughts on this.
So, Lisa, if you can hear me.
Because he's apparently not too far away. So West LA, particularly, you can check out Frontier. I don't know if the prices are going to be that much different, but it's fiber, so you might get faster than Spectrum, price for price. And it's over most of West LA. I don't know which part of West LA she's in, but that's just from my personal experience because that's what I'm on right now. I would recommend for anybody who's in a similar situation, whether you're in West LA or not, check out broadbandnow.com. It's an Austin created site, Brian, and you just put in your zip code and it will show you all of the different providers in your area. So you can do a little shopping around and you'll always be surprised because there'll be somebody you didn't realize. Maybe it's a satellite provider. Maybe it's a DSL provider. My gosh, 90210 has a lot of providers. That's crazy. So take a look at that and see if there's something available for you there. You could always look at maybe using a mobile provider. That's another way to go sometimes if the LTE service is fast enough for you and you already have it.
Tom, you beat me to the punch on that one. That was my first thing. Number one, whatever you do, don't go right back to Spectrum because one of the benefits of hopping from provider to provider is they're each going to want to entice you with a try us on for size offer. And if you're smart about it, you cannot get dinged on it. But in the meantime, you could even end up going back to Spectrum saying, all right, I want internet only and, you know, make your offer. You're up against Frontier or whatever. But in the interim, check with your mobile provider because I know that like depending on your region, depending on what kind of LTE speeds you get, I get 80 megabit LTE. And just recently, like 4 months ago, AT&T finally put us on a plan that they swear is truly and honestly unthrottled, unrestricted, unlimited tethering, just go nuts, use all our stuff. And if the price difference to get on one of those kind of plans for your mobile carrier might be low enough that it's worth doing. And then as far as Better Call Saul, if that's truly the only thing you care about, just buy the season on day one. You may not get to watch it at the same time as everyone else. If you don't care about that, good. You can get up the next morning, watch it the very next time. It'll be in beautiful high definition. You'll never have any service troubles. All the commercials will be edited out. You got all the amenities. You're going to love it.
And the other thing to look at, because I think Brian's probably right for you. It sounds like you're like, I just want the one show. But you might look at Philo. It is a cheaper service than Sling TV because it's only doing AMC networks, Discovery networks, and Viacom networks. But maybe there's something else in there that makes it worth the little bit a month. And it's cheaper than Sling TV, which is giving you ESPN and a bunch of things that maybe you don't care about.
Yep.
We got one last email here from Josh in Columbus, Ohio. It says, hey, Tom and Brian, I was wondering if you think Disney's new streaming service could be the return of the Disney Vault. He's talking about the Disney service that's going to launch in 2019 that will have Disney movies and Marvel movies and Star Wars movies. For the audience members who might not know what the Disney Vault is, during the VHS era, Disney would pull movies from stores. They would disappear for years to be re-released in some sort of new edition that had nothing new about it. I'm wondering if we could see something like that happen with all the Disney content. You go on iTunes, Google Play, Netflix, etc., and movies like Star Wars, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and Disney Animation cannot be purchased or watched unless you subscribe to the Disney streaming service. Then every time there's an anniversary of a film's release, they allow it to be sold on the other platforms for a limited time at a marked up price. Also, I could see Disney tier the service where you pay different prices for access to more popular content. What are your thoughts on this? Speak to me. Oh, captains of cord killing.
Oh, by the way, this is from Josh in Columbus, Ohio. This is the first installment of the new Josh Chronicles. Thank you, Kevin Feige.
We've rebooted Josh, and now he's from Columbus, Ohio, instead of PA. I mean, VA.
Yeah.
You know what? The Disney Vault never left, Josh. That's the sad truth. If you try to go buy Lady and the Tramp, you can't. You cannot buy Lady and the Tramp digitally on movies anywhere. At Movies Anywhere, we'll show you the listings for Vudu, iTunes, Google Play, Amazon. There's a couple other movies in there. Cinderella was another one I looked at. You can buy Bambi. You can buy Snow White. So they're not all in the vault right now. But yes, Josh, I think you're probably right. One of the big advantages to the Disney streaming service could be, hey, we've got access to all the movies, even the ones that are in the vault.
What about Song of the South? Is that available everywhere?
I think that one might be permanently in the vault.
Well, are you sure? Oh.
I don't know, Br'er Rabbit. I think it might be.
Right. A quick search brings up what it alleges to be a DVD, but it's from Etsy, which makes me think it's a little more homegrown than one might like.
So is it a person selling a DVD on Etsy, or did they...
I think it's
a production in their backyard.
No. I think it is somebody who... Oh, no. I guess they did have it on DVD. Look at that.
So it's just like an eBay thing.
But like Maxwell DVD, like a home burnt?
I don't know. That'd be interesting.
Oh, VCD?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's
all right.
Stuff.
But no, there's not even a Song of the South listing on Movies Anywhere. To be honest, like it's just not even in the catalog. All right, folks, thanks for watching. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on diamondclub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We will kill all your cords next time.
Hey, guys, Tom and Brian here. We just wanted to say thank you to all of our $5 patrons who keep us loud, live, and independent. You guys make Cord Killers the production that it is.
Your name appears in the video credits and appears in our hearts. And if you'd like to become one of them or see who they are, you can go to patreon.com/cordkillers.
You'll need to do more than just go there, though. You'll have to sign up and, you know, pledge an amount. But
unless you just want to see who they are.
Well, I mean, you could gawk. That's a little creepy, isn't it?
If you want to be a gawker,
let's go.
It's up to you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.